Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The Federal Communications Commission has approved new rules governing internet access. The rules add some teeth to this concept that we've all heard about before, known as net neutrality, which calls for all internet traffic to be treated equally. Up right now on our politics website, It's a Free Country, we have two videos that try, operative word here is try, to explain net neutrality, one pro and one con. Here's a bit from the video supporting net neutrality, this produced by the organization Free Press.
You connect to the web through pipes owned by telephone and cable companies. But the deal is they're not allowed to mess with what's inside those pipes, whether it's Google or Yahoo. Everybody's website gets the same speed and quality. That's called net neutrality. The companies want to set up a restricted fast lane on the internet, but only for their partners and services. Only sites who pay them a huge fee would be allowed to use it, making them gatekeepers.
All right, and here's a bit from the anti-net neutrality video. Now picture this, it's two animated puppies trying to explain it in terms we can all understand.
Can you explain net neutrality for me? Sure. Pretend I own the company that provides your internet connection. But instead of delivering data, imagine I deliver pizzas, okay? I'd like a pepperoni pizza with extra cheese and a free order of breadsticks, sure, no problem. That will be there in 90 minutes. 90 minutes? What if I pay you extra to deliver it in 30 minutes? Sorry. Al Franken says we have to deliver all our pizzas in the same amount of time. It's 90 minutes for everyone. Al Franken. The guy who wears diapers? We don't talk about that. He's a senator now. Oh God.
So did that help clear things up?
Well,
no. You can watch the full videos at itsafreecountry.org, and we'll do our best right now on the air to explain just what yesterday's FCC ruling means. Under the new regulations, the broadband companies that wire up your home to provide you with internet, like Time Warner, for example, would not be able to block websites that offer rival services. For example, it means that your cable company, which offers movie channels, won't be able to slow traffic of a Netflix video. Or as another example, a wireless carrier such as Verizon Wireless could not block competing web phone services such as Vonage. They also won't be able to create what has been called a two-tier internet by dividing delivering of content into fast and slow lanes. But the new rules are less stringent for wireless internet providers, that is, the mobile web that you get on your mobile devices. What do these regulations mean for you, the consumer? Should we be alarmed? Is this what some call fake net neutrality? Joining us is Tim Wu, a professor at the Columbia University Law School, who has also advised the FCC on these regulations. Tim Wu, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
What did you advise the FCC to do, and did they listen?
Well, you know, they said, what should we do? And I said, well, the first thing you should do is do something. This was a big Obama was elected in 08, that he promised to put in net neutrality rules. And the first thing I said was, you know, you got to do something. The rules didn't end up as strong as a lot of people would have wished, but at least they're there. And that much I'm happy about.
All of this that I just read sounds pretty good for me, the consumer, like it protects me from companies trying to impose a fast lane and a slow net lane on the internet for the sake of their business partner websites. Should I feel comforted?
I think I'm glad they've done something. I agree, especially on the wireline. The main problem is the criticism of the rule is it didn't go far enough on wireless. That is to say, we actually haven't seen the rule. Even though we're talking about this, no one has actually. I've seen the rule upside down in the FCC itself. You're not. What I mean is, like, I was sitting there and it was on someone's desk.
Uh-huh.
But no one has actually. All the pundits, everyone talking, has not seen the physical rule because the FCC hasn't released it.
But they took an actual vote yesterday,
yeah.
And there are press accounts of what they voted on.
There are. The press also doesn't really know. But I just wanted to add that. But basically, what you said is right. What we've heard read to us and so forth. The criticism is that it is slightly weaker on wireless than everyone would have liked, which is the worry is then that, you know, you'll buy a, say, a Verizon phone and all the stuff that's not from Google will be extremely poorly delivered. Or you'll buy an AT&T iPhone, all the Google stuff is going to be terrible. So you have sort of two walled gardens going at it, and that's what people are worried about.
Is this why some are calling it fake net neutrality?
That is the argument behind it. Look, I think I don't agree with the fake net neutrality thing. It's pretty strong on wireline. That is to say that, you know, the stuff that comes into your home, cable companies. The best thing,
right.
I think, is going
to... And to be clear, when we talk about wired versus wireless internet, Wi-Fi is still the wired internet for these purposes, right? Because you're having, you have a computer that has Wi-Fi, which connects to a router, which is plugged into the wall. And what we talk about as the wireless internet, less regulated for these purposes, is the internet that you get on your phone or your iPad or mobile devices.
Right. Exactly. Very well explained. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And why did they do it this way? Why did they make that particular distinction?
You know, AT&T was, I said, why don't we, I was in the FCC, and I said, why don't we just extend it to wireless? And they said, that's great, but AT&T will never agree to that. And I said, AT&T doesn't have a vote on this commission. They said, yeah, but they got 60 congressmen. They can make our life miserable.
Really?
We have to do, so that's basically the reason. The force of the lobby, of the wireless lobby, is too strong, and they weren't willing to go against it. Because there's no real principled distinction between the internet that comes between your phone and the internet that comes to your computer. I mean, the phones are computers. There's some technical things that need to be a little more, you know, manage the bandwidth better, but there's no fundamental reason that you would think it makes sense to discriminate against Google stuff on an AT&T platform because it's a wireless phone. There's no deep reason for that.
Listeners, any questions, any comments about the FCC's net neutrality decision this week? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can put a comment on our website if you can reach it. No, you can reach it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show, 212-433-WNYC. And if you're just a consumer of the internet, you can call in. Maybe you want some of this explained to you by Columbia University law professor Tim Wu, or maybe you have an opinion about it. That's fine. 212-433-9692. Or maybe you, as an inventor of some kind of new app or something, don't want the FCC messing around in who can do what on the internet in a business sense too much. Whatever your relationship to this, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And what about from the producer side? I mean, there are people like the Republican commissioners, Robert McDowell and Meredith Atwell Baker, who voted against even this much net neutrality, who said the rules will stifle innovation. Do you see any merit in that argument?
I think it's wrong. I think almost all of the new companies and entrepreneurs you talked about are in favor of net neutrality rules. And the reason is it's their chance to get on the network. Take a company like Netflix. You know, they were originally sending around DVDs, great business. They decide they want to start streaming video. This is their business now. They need net neutrality to get that business started. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to think of a million rules why Comcast or Time Warner would like to kill Netflix. So a company like that, trying to start a new idea, needs net neutrality. You know, Google, when it got started, needed net neutrality. All the companies that are trying to start a new product to reach a consumer basically need a way to do it without having to pay off Comcast or AT&T or Verizon. And so it's pretty important to entrepreneurship in this country.
George in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Listen, there was a Supreme Court ruling recently, last year, prevented them from, prevented the FCC from making rules for the web, for the internet, said they didn't have the power. Has that gone away somehow?
Right. I'm glad you brought this up, because there was a Supreme Court ruling that had to do with an FCC attempt previously to impose some net neutrality. And the Supreme Court said, you know, the FCC, you're about regulating radio and television. Congress never gave you the authority to regulate the internet. So what happened to that?
That decision, it was actually by the D.C. Circuit, which is a court below the Supreme Court.
Sorry.
Which is fine. No, it's fine. And they're kind of in the same city, so and judges all look the same, so come on. But that decision did knock down the Republican FCC. Basically, the FCC's tried again. They're using the same basis of authority, and they explained all these reasons why they think they should be able to do it. I don't know what's going to happen. A lot of people think there's going to be a challenge to the law and that it will again be struck down. So it is vulnerable. There is a chance that it won't be challenged because most of the parties agreed to this in negotiations. But anyway, yes, the caller is exactly right that this law is has some vulnerability.
Graham from New Jersey writes on our site, can you talk specifically about congestion management? My cable service at home is slow. I think he means his internet via
right.
the cable.
Yeah.
Is slow because my neighbor hosts a popular BitTorrent site. I want this guy managed or forced to pay more
right.
so my service is the best it can be without me paying more.
Fair enough. The net neutrality rules, as I understand them, allow what's called reasonable network management. So they do allow management they allow the cable companies. Often the companies are too cheap to invest in good management. That's one point I want to make, as long as they think you're still going to pay. The other thing that may be coming, which some people find outrageous and I think is okay, is usage-based billing, which is to say you pay more the more you use. So in theory, if they have a usage-based billing theory, your neighbor would have to pay a lot more money and might reconsider how much they want to download or upload or at least pay for it. I think that the companies need to upgrade their plants. The thing is, the companies, there's a difference between network management on the one hand, which is like trying to make sure congestion works okay, and say blocking Netflix, which is we don't like this company because they're competing with us. It's a huge difference.
But
yeah.
Netflix itself presents a huge congestion management problem, doesn't it? Because it's sending us movies which take up a tremendous amount of bandwidth, and so it's kind of forcing the internet service providers to upgrade their infrastructure, which can be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are few services like movie providers who are really dominant in how much of the bandwidth they're taking up and how much they're forcing all this infrastructure investment, which is going to force them to raise everybody's prices, then maybe there should be some selective charging.
I mean, there is charging. You're paying for your internet service, and you should be able to get to use it the way you want to. You pay a lot of money for internet service, like $50 a month. I mean, it depends on your program. And the idea is you get to use that bandwidth as you like. And if you want to use it for Netflix, that should be your right. And I agree they have to upgrade their services. They're making a ton of money. What the cable companies should do is get rid of some of those cable channels that no one's watching and turn that into internet service. The problem is that they don't, you know, they're still TV companies. They haven't figured out that people like the internet, and the cable could be twice as good or three times as fast as it is. It's just they're maintaining all these crazy cable companies because the cable channels because they get money from them, and I don't know, it's kind of a mess.
Charlie in New Bern, you're on WNYC. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, I'm calling as a college student.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have talked a lot about the benefits that neutrality would have to entrepreneurship, to Netflix and things of that sort. But as a common internet user at a university, what benefits would it have to me?
Charlie, where do you go, by the way?
UNC Wilmington.
And are people talking about this at all down there? Since so many college students, you know, are so web savvy in general, is net neutrality a term that you discuss with others, with you know, other folks there?
No, I'm driving through New York City right now, and I actually just heard about it on the radio.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I was curious.
Okay, Tim?
Sure. I just think it's important for anyone. It's important for entrepreneurs because they start their companies. One of the things that is interesting about the college students tend to be great creators of content, amateur content. And net neutrality is extremely important for amateur creators. Let's say like Wikipedia editors or bloggers. Because then you got, you know, Wikipedia loads basically as fast as CNN right now. Frankly, it's better most of the time. And that's all amateur. In a world of non-net neutrality, CNN's like, we're going to give you this money, or CNN or Fox News, like, we give you all this money, we want good access, and we want Wikipedia to be slower because and Wikipedia will never have as much money as some of the commercial media sites. Frankly, public radio, same issue. You know, I mean, public radio will never have the same money that commercial news does. And so net neutrality has a certain equality among creators. So for college students who are big creators of Wikipedia and amateur content and weird videos on YouTube, it's their law.
Charlie, thanks for calling, and good luck at UNC. While internet providers can't arbitrarily block or slow down access to a site under these new rules, my understanding is they can strike business deals allowing a company to pay extra for faster access to consumers. Is that true?
That is something we're not sure about. That understanding is something. I mean, like I said, the rule is actually not out. Mm-hmm. And the FCC told me that we have written into the rule a presumption that what's called paid prioritization would be unreasonable, would be illegal.
Because
so there's some disagreement on this, and, uh-huh. and my reading of the rule is that would be illegal. It depends slightly on how it's done. So, for example, I believe that, say, Verizon could speed up all video indiscriminately, but doing a special deal, even let's say with Netflix or with Hulu or something, that is supposed to be illegal.
Because that would largely defeat the purpose of net neutrality.
That would be the fast
right?
lane. That yeah. is the fast lane.
The fast lane versus the slow lane. Yeah. Some sites can load faster than others based on the preference of the provider.
Yeah.
Do you see implications for free speech in this debate?
It's
for
all about free speech.
For political speech?
Yeah, it is all about free speech. I mean, how does an unknown candidate get started now? It's the web, right? You know, they go out there, they try to raise money, they sign up their videos. If you have to start by, let's say we have a future where everything is like Verizon, Google, or Apple, AT&T. And so you want to start a campaign, you're like, all right, I got to go talk to those guys to try and get my content on their site. That's just a completely different kind of place to start. A lot of the important candidacies we've seen over the last while, I mean, even the Tea Party, like it or not, Obama's campaign, are internet-based campaigns, and that depends on easy access. It's fundamental to democracy to have some channels of communication that are open. Go back to the 19th century. I have a new book out, The Master Switch, which is about this cycles of open and closed in the media world. And in a closed media world, the democracy suffers because it's hard to start a new movement.
We'll have to have you back to yeah. do a bona fide book interview
sure, that's
for
fine.
The Master Switch. Lee in Rockland County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lee.
Hi. My question is, how might this FCC ruling impact positively or negatively the merger between Comcast and NBC Universal, where NBC Universal has around 15,000 employees, Comcast has around 100,000 employees. So how might this benefit or be a negative ruling for this merger?
Which one do you work for, Lee?
NBC.
and what does it mean for consumers outside of the employee? I know some people
sure.
are crazy opposed to this Comcast-NBC
yeah,
merger.
Technically, these are different issues.
Yeah.
Technically, they're a different docket at the FCC. This is an issue that I'm also involved in, and it's not technically going to affect it, but I'll just tell you, in the next couple of weeks, that's coming down too. And right now, the negotiations are beginning on that merger.
Do you have an opinion as to whether that merger, it's basically a cable provider with a major network?
Yeah, I'm opposed to the merger. I think it's an inherent conflict of interest. I think it'll be very hard to police, and so therefore they should just block it. But it looks like that's not going to happen. In other words, it looks like the merger will go through, and so it's going to be a discussion of conditions. I guess part of the relevance is the net new, there'll be a question to try to prevent. You know, Comcast now is now going to be have a strong interest in trying to block non-NBC content, and so there's going to be some sort of net neutrality plus stuff put on Comcast because of that.
One more. Jack and Nutley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
All right.
I'm still kind of reeling from your guest's early comment that AT&T pretty much owns 60 senators and that those senators will tell the FCC what they may or may not decide to do or cooperate with. You know, I think that this points out very clearly that we're given these two parties and this facade that, oh, the FCC actually can make decisions that matter. They make the decisions they're allowed to make. So I'd like to encourage your listeners to compensate for that imbalance to pretty much boycott AT&T whenever they get the opportunity.
Well, I didn't call for that. I'm just repeating what I've heard. So it goes, and it was congressmen, not senators. But basically, the point was let me put the background. Obama's FCC has three votes, and that's all you need to make the rule. The pressure was on the Democrats to make the rule even stronger. So there was no sort of needing the Republic. There was no compromise necessary. The compromise was with AT&T. And the whole question is, what will AT&T allow? And we're like, well, why don't we do this on wireless, like have the Ford? I won't get into the details, but why don't we have this proposal? AT&T won't accept that. And I kept saying, AT&T does not vote on this commission.
But are there any clean corporate hands here? I mean, Google wants what it wants for its purposes. Apple, Netflix, whoever.
Yeah. All the companies are involved. They need to be. But I got to say, the phone lobby is the strongest. Like, the phone lobby effectively has a vote at the commission. It's just like they're a vote. They're like, well, Let's see what they'll agree to. And then we go to AT&T, and they're, no, the AT&T won't agree with it. We've got to come back. And I just get into it. Like, why do they need to listen to AT&T, considering they don't vote? Well, they're like, ah, you know, they can make our life miserable. They'll summon us in for hearings. They'll defund us. They just have almost like, they'll just make our lives miserable. So we have to do it. Not what they say, but we have to negotiate around them.
All right. The FCC vote yesterday, 3-2, on these new rules for Internet access. Tim Wu, professor at Columbia Law School, author of the book The Master Switch. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And listeners, be sure to check out It's a Free Country's 2010 retrospective, What Happened?
Hey, what happened?
Recognize the voice. That's Fred Willard from the mockumentary A Mighty Wind. And that's the question that It's a Free Country will help answer all this week. Each day we're posting an interactive timeline of the notable events that took place this year in five major issue categories: immigration, war, health care, the economy. And today we've posted a look back at energy and the environment, from failed climate legislation to the Gulf oil spill to some big events that were more under the radar. Find it all at itsafreecountry.org, where you can find the answer to the question that we know you're asking about 2010.
Hey, what happened?
At itsafreecountry.org. Now, coming up right after the break, and you can start calling right now, a call in on the question, what did I get myself into? It's a question I'm sure some of you are asking yourselves if you've decided to spend the holidays with your significant other's family. So we want to open the phones right now for people to tell us what you got yourselves into. Mostly, what are the strange, wacky, bizarre, or extreme holiday traditions that the family of your boyfriend, girlfriend, or spouse partakes in every year that you are now being dragged into as well? Maybe happily, maybe not. What did you get yourself into with your partner's holiday traditions? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll take your What Did I Get Myself Into calls right after this.